talking about Leviticus 1 to 3. And if you remember, this is the structure of Leviticus. Leviticus 1 to 7 is all about sacrifices. And then we have chapters 8 to 10, 8 to 9 actually, which is the sanctification or the installation of the priest, which ends in chapter 10, being the problem of the strange fire that was brought and then the two sons of Aaron were killed. But we're talking here about Leviticus 1-7, so we won't go over the rest. So within these sacrifices, you have two sets. You have Leviticus 1-5 that seem to be addressed to the Israelites. If you go to chapter 1, verse 1, for example, we read, "The Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, 'Speak to the Israelite people and say to them.'" Here you have that introduction again that we also read in 4, verse 1. Okay, "Speak to the Israelites." But then, as soon as you get to chapter 6, verse 1, we read, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Command Aaron and his sons.'" Okay, so here is a distinction. Leviticus 1 to 5 is addressed to the Israelites. Leviticus 6 and 7 to the priests. And these two chapters, they focus on who is allowed to eat of the sacrifices and where should he eat, he or she. Okay? So that's this. It's not just about the priest, but this is about food, okay, and eating. The structure is a little bit different in the way it is discussed. Here in chapter 1 to 5, you first have the burnt offering. Then you have the grain offering. Then what some people call the peace offering, then the pure.
What do you call it?
The peace offering?
Yeah. So the shalem?
That's the zevach shlamim, yes. Purification offering, and the guilt offering. Okay, so that's what we find in Leviticus 1 to 5. And in Leviticus 6 to 7, you have a slightly different order. You start with the burnt offering, then the grain offering, but then you go to the purification offering, the guilt offering, and then you have the peace offering. Now, if you look at why it is different, as I said, the focus is on who can eat, what can you eat, and where can you eat it. Of course, in the peace offering, in which the people that offer it and sacrifice it actually eat parts of it, you need to discuss more. And so you see that there are about maybe 10, 15 verses dedicated to the peace offering. Well, these have all about five verses. In the burnt offering, nothing is eaten, of course. Everything goes to God. And so the focus in the burnt offering is not on eating, it is actually not eating, it's the fire that eats. The fire that needs to burn constantly is discussed right here in chapter 6 as a fire that eats the sacrifice, and that uses also the word eat.
But I'm still in 1 to 5. Are we saying that nothing
in
eats
all in chapter 6 to 7, where the focus is on eating, so this is 6 to 7. Okay, this is 1 to 5.
So it starts the least complicated in terms of no eating, and it goes to the most complicated in terms of everyone eating. Like,
yeah, maybe you could see it like that too.
Where you have to discuss where to eat it, who can eat it, it has many more details.
Yes. Okay, but so where we are and what we will read is this part. But just so you have an idea where we are, Leviticus 1 to 7, 1 to 5, 6 to 7. And then the different orders, probably for the reason because you have more to discuss about the peace offering. Okay. Now let's read chapter 1. I propose we just go chapter by chapter instead of reading everything at once. Mm-hmm. Jim, would you like to start?
Yeah. Now Adonai called to Moses and spoke to him out of the tent of meeting, saying, "Speak to Bnei Israel and tell them, when any one of you brings an offering to Adonai, you may present your offering of livestock from the herd or from the flock. If his sacrifice is a burnt offering from the herd, he is to present a male without blemish. He is to offer it at the entrance of the tent of meeting, so that he may be accepted before Adonai. He is to lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering, so that it will be accepted for him to make atonement on his behalf. He is to slaughter the bull before Adonai. Then Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, are to present the blood and splash it around on the altar that is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. He is to skin the burnt offering and cut it into pieces. The sons of Aaron, the Kohen, are to place fire on the altar and arrange wood upon the fire. Then Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, shall arrange the pieces, the head and the fat, upon the wood that is on the fire, which is atop the altar. But its innards and its legs he is to wash with water. The Kohen shall burn it all up as smoke on the altar, for a burnt offering made by fire, a soothing aroma to Adonai.
But if his offering is from the flock of the sheep or of the goats for a burnt offering, he shall offer it to a male without defect. He shall slay it on the side of it northwards before the Lord, and Aaron's sons of priests shall sprinkle its blood around on the altar. Next, the one presenting the offering must cut it into parts with its head and its suet, and the priest must arrange them on the wood which is in the fire on the altar. Then the one presenting the offering must wash the entrails and the legs in water, and the priest must present all of it and offer it up in smoke on the altar. It is a burnt offering, a gift of a soothing aroma to the Lord. 14.
If your offering to the Lord is a burnt offering of birds, you shall choose your offering from turtle doves and pigeons. The priest shall bring it to the altar and wring off its head and turn it into smoke on the altar, and its blood shall be drained out against the side of the mouth. He shall remove its crop with its contents and throw it at the east side of the altar in the place for ashes. He shall tear it open by its wings without severing it. The priest shall turn it into smoke on the altar. On the wood that is on the fire, it is a burnt offering and offering by fire, a pleasing odor to the Lord.
Right. So that's the burnt offering. As you see, it's simply divided into what type of animal you bring: cattle, sheep and goats, or birds. It goes from the more valuable to the lesser. And as you realize, when we read this, this is quite an unknown world to us.
Yeah.
Sacrifice. At least I don't sacrifice daily.
Or even yearly.
Or yearly, annually.
The people I connect with in China do.
Right, so maybe they have a little bit more knowledge about this.
Also bring sheep and goats.
Right. And so everywhere they have their own explanations of how they do it, also in the ancient Near East. You have parallels in what type of sacrifices you have, sacrifices that you burn completely, sacrifices that you eat from yourself, but you have to listen to their explanation. And here, as you read it, you realize that there must have been some kind of a common understanding of what a burnt offering was that we do not share. So we try to piece together what a burnt offering actually was and all the other sacrifices by just looking at here and there. You find a word that might indicate why they would even bring a burnt offering. But it's obvious that
there... I don't understand what is a burnt offering, because basically you're bringing a sheep or a goat or a dove or whatever it happens to be, and it's presumably it's dead.
You
or
kill
you're bringing it alive.
You kill it. Yeah, here it
you're
says.
You're killing it. Okay, mm-hmm. So you kill it. And then it becomes a burnt offering because you're putting it on the fire or setting fire to it. I have such problems with this whole thing.
No, it's burnt up. The whole thing goes up in smoke. You don't eat any of it.
Right.
That's
so it's burnt up. It's burnt up, and thus it is called a burnt offering.
Yeah.
But it feels like you're bringing a burnt offering. You're not. You're bringing an animal you've just killed and
sure.
giving it as a burnt offering.
Yeah.
I guess my question is
or
why?
Or a green animal for you.
Sorry?
Bringing the dead animal and burning it.
Bringing the dead animal and burning it. So the next question for me is why? But I'm
the whole thing goes to God, whereas the other ones, you eat part of it. That's
the priest.
Or the priest eats part of it.
Does that mean tell us why?
That's not the question. Yeah,
it just says when you do it.
Yeah.
I know. And that's my problem with the Leviticus. And people who work in Africa tell me that it's the most evangelistic book of the New Old Testament. That's what. If you can understand Leviticus, then you know how to preach the gospel in Africa. But I am not there yet, obviously. Go on. Sorry, Nick.
Right.
What does it tell you when you use these offerings?
Well, it doesn't say here. It doesn't say it in Leviticus 1. Actually, the reason why Leviticus 1 to 3 are also taken together, often, at least in rabbinic thought, is that these constitute the non-obligatory sacrifices. You don't have to bring a purification offering, you have to bring. If you give birth and after birth, you have to bring a purification offering. But these offerings, it doesn't say when you have to bring them or how. It just is... We're talking about these three, yeah.
Okay.
Those are voluntary offerings. It's not completely voluntary, but when they are private offerings, they are voluntary. Even that is not completely true. For example, when you do bring a sacrifice after you give birth, then you can bring a purification offering, but then if you don't have enough money, you can bring two birds, and one bird will be a purification offering and the other will be a burnt offering. So there's some overlap. Anyway, let's go to the beginning and find a few hints of what this burnt offering actually does. We're reading about the burnt offering in Leviticus 1. Let's see. What do you read as what might be an indication of what a burnt offering is for when you read through the first few verses?
The bit that stood out to me was it says three times in this chapter, I have a soothing aroma to Adonai. You've got something slightly different. But somehow.
Sin. Atonement.
Atonement.
Okay,
so in verse 4, it mentions this will be for your atonement or for expiation. Or it's interesting, in this Ola, there's not a specific sin that it mentions. But there is something that you realize is between you and God, which has to be atoned for. And that only happens at the sanctuary through the priest. So that's one word in the 1 verse 4.
Being acceptable.
Being acceptable. That again in verse 4. So that it may be acceptable in his behalf in expiation for him. Okay, so what atonement is is a big thing. It's a big question. But when you read the rest of Leviticus, you realize that atonement has as a result forgiveness, if there was a sin, or purification, if there was impurity.
This last week, you laid out the whole book of Leviticus last week,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of drew it like a, you know, these are like this, and there's like a,
right, right.
Yeah,
that's probably, yeah. Yes.
But what became clear last week, which was new for me, realizing it, is that purity
is not sin.
Impurity
or
is not
impurity,
sin.
The issue, purity, impurity, that's nothing to do with sin.
Yes.
Whereas atonement and forgiveness is to do with sin. Is that not right? I mean, that's why we've got both in this
verse.
But
what you just said is atonement can be both.
It can lead to two things.
It can wipe away moral sin or it can wipe away ceremonial impurity.
Right.
Oh, right.
So if you continue to read, especially in the chapters on purity and impurity in Leviticus 11 to 15, you see that after it says, and you will do atonement for him, then you have a pronunciation by the priest probably that he is then clean. Let's find one example. Oh, it doesn't matter. Either one.
And what I was trying to say is that if Yom Kippur, if the Day of Atonement, is maybe the climax or the most significant part of Leviticus, then starting the book off with this Olah, which is the based off of, you know, atoning for something, then there's some significance there maybe with the overall theme of the book.
Yeah, but atonement you also find in the purification offering, for example. As I mentioned, for example, in Leviticus 12, after birth, you bring your offering. In Leviticus 12, verse 7, it says, he shall offer it before the Lord.
Yeah, I'm not talking about sin per se. I'm just talking about the idea
of atonement.
Of atonement, whatever it's
echoing. And there's Leviticus 4.
Well, let me read 12 verse 7 for a second. He shall offer it before the Lord and make expiation on her behalf. And here it says again, vechiper, so the same word, vechiper aleha. And then the pronunciation is, she shall be clean.
Where are you now? 12
what? 12 verse 7. What? But she brought a purification offering and a burnt offering.
Yeah.
Right, so but you see the pronunciation of being clean afterwards. So the result, however you want to translate vechiper, bring, make atonement, make expiation, or whatever etymological background you want to bring in, the conclusion is you will be pure or you will be forgiven. So those two are the result of this word, of atonement.
So the NET Bible says, ultimately the goal of either purging or appeasing was to maintain a proper relationship between the Lord who dwelt in the tabernacle and Israelites.
Right.
This means the tabernacle was pitched.
And in the Bible, when you put your hand on something, isn't it this idea of transference?
Mm. Well, it's a big question if it is transference.
Or identification.
Or identification.
Right, but like, you know, when Moses it's like almost the same language here, I think, on the spirit, when the spirit transfers
right.
from Moses to whoever.
Well,
it was.
Not just Moses, Elijah too, right? He puts his hands. It's like a transfer of authority when you put your hands on someone.
Right. Well, it's interesting for the Olah, for example. It mentions it with the bigger animals. It doesn't mention it with the birds. And if it's about identification, then it's clear you have it in your hand. Well, if you have
right.
to log it with a rope. Inside, you lay your hand on it, maybe as identification, but maybe there is something like transference.
But I thought it was both. I thought it was transference in some situations. I mean, if you think of the way the authority of Elijah or Moses or whatever is transferred, I mean, one even talks about the, you know, New Testament talks about the laying on of hands to receive
mm-hmm.
the Holy Spirit, which is, I don't know about in terms of the words. But it's different from the identification with this animal who is going to, you're not transferring anything to the animal, you're identifying with it, and this animal is going to be the one that, I don't know.
Well, I would say the transferring of sin or impurity or whatever, because isn't that the whole thing of the scapegoat?
Certainly with a scapegoat.
Yeah.
It mentioned?
There it mentions it, that the fruit, Aaron will... Put the
so
sin
it is about transfer.
I mean, I read this verse.
It mentions the iniquities of everybody.
Yes.
I read this verse and I think of Yom Kippur.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
It's interesting that your nets is about appeasing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've heard that said that that's the difference between Judaism, Christianity, and other things where they appease the spirits. And actually, with Judaism and Christianity, it's a legal thing, not an appeasement.
Right.
Just a side comment, really. It's kind of
What I like about your translation is also that it clearly indicates who does what. In the Hebrew you don't find it, but it is clear who does what, but you don't read it in many English translations. So here it makes clear that actually the one who offers does a lot. He is the one who skins it. He is the one who cuts it in pieces.
Yeah.
Which, if you look at other places in the ancient Near East, it's often the priest that does everything. But here the offerer is heavily involved, except for bringing it to the altar,
right,
is forbidden.
The blood part, the
yes, and brings also the pieces to the altar.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes me
spiritually for us. If I'm going to make sense of it, then if I offer a sacrifice, whatever that is, let's put it into sort of modern human terms. I decide that I need to spend more time with the Lord. I have to make my plan. I have to do it. And then he accepts the offering. Whatever. I mean, for me, it's a sacrifice of time, let's say. I'm just pulling it out of my head, trying to make sense of how I don't work in China. You know, I don't understand. I still have a real problem in what you achieve by offering an animal or a bird or whatever.
Well, you achieve that you are acceptable before God. Maybe we'll read one section of Malachi.
And also,
it has a nice,
giving a big gift to God. I mean,
yeah,
there's a financial element here. You know how much a cow costs?
Yeah,
I mean, can you imagine?
It costs, yeah. So in terms of, that's what we're taught. When we make a sacrifice, we sing happily, sacrifice of praise and whatever, and it's words. And we don't recognize that there is a cost involved.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Well, something has to die, doesn't it? And nowadays it's ourself that has to die.
Right.
But then it was an animal, and now it's us connected with the fact that Jesus has already died for us. So,
anyway.
The verse that Leviticus 1:4 connects up to in young people is Leviticus 16:21.
Can you read it?
I have Hebrew here.
Oh, okay.
Then Aaron shall lay both his hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the iniquities of the people of Israel and all their transgressions, all their sins, putting them on the head of the goat and sending it away into the wilderness by means of someone designated for the task. The distinction there is two hands versus one hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the distinction is it's not an olah, it's a chatat. It's a purification offering. So there are differences.
Wasn't there a connection that it was atoning? Like, what's the concept of atoning?
Right, right.
Just wiping something away.
Well, the question is if you can apply it from one place also to the others. Does it mean wiping away because it meant it in the Day of Atonement? Do you have the same idea of wiping away there?
So the NET Bible, if I can read one more interesting verse, Genesis 32:21. Maybe Kevin, you can find it quick in English. It says, "Vamaten gam hine adcha Yaakov acharenu, panav ulai yisa panai."
32:21.
Ki amar ach hapra panav b'mincha ha'olechet lefanai.
Right.
So
appeasing.
I'm going to atone his face. How would I literally translate that? It's the same word for atone. I'm going to make atonement before him with this gift that is going in front of me. And it's a gift of all those animals.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got, for he thought, let me appease him with the offering that goes ahead of me.
So there they've translated the word we're looking at for atonement with appease.
And which makes sense. Esau is probably angry. He wants to give something which makes Esau happy.
Where is the chatat, though, up there? I don't see it.
It's the purification offering.
Oh.
But so we're not talking about that yet. But let's read Malachi. Malachi 1. I'll start in verse 7. I'll start in verse 6. A son honors his father and servants their master. If then I am a father, where is the honor due to me, or due me? And if I am a master, where is the respect due me, says the Lord of hosts, to you, O priests, who despise my name? You say, how have we despised your name? By offering polluted food on my altar. And you say, how have we polluted it? By thinking that the Lord's table may be despised. When you offer blind animals in sacrifice, is that not wrong? And when you offer those that are lame or sick, is that not wrong? Try presenting that to your governor. Will he be pleased with you or show you favor? So here is probably an idea that we can apply also back to the Ola, to the sacrifices, that as you bring a whole animal to your governor, you also bring that to God, and it is for pleasing God. For maybe requesting favor, maybe you want something from God, you want to hear from him, you need to make a decision, maybe there is something that you feel is in between you and God. It doesn't say in Leviticus 1 for what it is brought. But you bring it because there needs to be alignment. And you need to bring it to the sanctuary. Okay, so here's a parallel, and it also has the same words in verse 8 as we read in Leviticus 1. Hayil tzacha. In Malachi 1 verse 8, it says, will he show you favor? Will you be acceptable?
And that ties up with the Leviticus verses line, which I kept reading, which was that what you do brings pleasure to the Lord. I can't, what is it exactly? It says it three times in that first chapter.
Acceptable. Yes, in verse 3 and 4.
Your aroma is...
For acceptance in your behalf before the Lord, you shall lay your hand on the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be acceptable in your behalf as atonement for you.
I've got a soothing aroma to the Lord.
And that too, yeah.
Does Malachi talk about Ola here?
No, it doesn't mention Ola.
But the context seems to substantiate at least what Sharon was saying earlier, because this is a blind lay. It's all the animals you don't want. It's all the animals that can't do anything for you, or the animals that aren't worth as much.
Yeah.
So the punch of Malachi is you're bringing me the scraps.
Right.
That's what it seems to be the thing. And so if it doesn't cost you something, if it's not something of value to you, then the sacrifice itself is ultimately worthless. Because you've got...
It's not a sacrifice.
It's not a sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to... If Jacob wanted to appease Esau and gave him some mangled animal, that's not going to do it.
Right.
It needs to be big and precious.
Is that's verse? Where's the word for the yitzah?
I'll see. Okay.
Where was that verse in the Leviticus?
Verse 3 and 4. Right, sorry. What? Gary?
Is this something, the whole thing that doesn't cost you something, is this connected to Ola or just in general the sacrifice system?
You always have to bring an animal that doesn't have a defect.
No, I got that part, but the word choice here, is it used for bringing peace and purpose?
That's a good question.
What's the word you're talking about, Ola?
The one is it?
No, it's only used for the Ola.
Randall's
very good. And once for the Zevach Shlamim, we'll get there.
What's interesting is when Abraham sacrifices Isaac, it's an Ola.
Yes.
Obviously, your son is going to cost you something.
Yes. Right.
What?
Randall.
I'm wondering if you have any thought on the word that you call the purification offering, because the word hatat, it has this basic root of het, and it's not called a tamat, it's not called an uncleanliness, it's called a
Milgram roof. Connects it with lichate. to purify, and also in its function. It seems to purify, for example, on the Day of Atonement, where it is the clearest, where you apply it throughout the tabernacle, and it clears the tabernacle from impurities.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Well, and maybe Milgram's biggest point was also it has always been translated as sin offering, but when you read it in the impurity laws, there is nothing, there's no sin in impurity.
Exactly.
And
that's
so.
The problem. So it's just a, to me, it's just a question.
Right.
And I think that's a good answer and is worthy of a little, you know, at least a little pause.
We'll definitely have a pause next week as well. It looks like it's up for.
Yes.
We're in the circle this week. Up for discussion.
So we're not in purification technically.
Yes. We're just dealing with the Ola, for which it has no mention why you would bring it. It is one that you start the day off with. The priests do that in the tabernacle, so that indicates its importance. You start with an Ola and you end with an Ola.
How do you spell Ola?
In Hebrew or in English? Ayin Lamed Hei. So sometimes people translate it with an offering that goes up, not a burnt offering.
I think to me, an Ola, because it's all burnt up, it's a total gift, a complete gift to God, where you could have no motivation of getting to eat from the barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing in it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in that sense, it's like, it's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Could the word Ola not mean just go up and just cover over, like, Alu, is it come from the same elements to go up?
At one point, not everything is burnt, actually, in the Ola. Remember?
The skin
is for the priest. But the rest is burned up, and so you don't get much. You as a one who sacrifices it, you don't get anything of it. No benefit for you, except for the benefit that you actually seek from God.
The reason why I'm asking is because whenever you do a barbecue, it doesn't always go up. It wafts over people. Like you were saying, there's nothing in it for you except the torture of smelling it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, in a very literal, physical sense, not everything goes straight up. It covers over the whole place. So that's why I was just wondering, etymologically, if Ola, like I'm thinking Alpine and Mayan, or other places where Al just more means over than actually going up. I'm just kind of curious if there's a way in which that meaning could possibly also be true, especially if it's the Hater. Or at least a midrash one.
Covered.
Yeah.
But you can always write poetry. Make
okay.
Poetry.
Yeah, it could be poetry.
Now, in general, I think there is the image of smoke going up. Even though it's maybe not literally always true that it really goes up, it is an image that you find in the Bible.
Yeah, sure.
Well, eventually it goes up.
Yeah.
It might cover the area first, but eventually it will flatten up in a way, or at least the way is the wind's blowing might go that way.
Right. So, again, to summarize why you would bring a burnt offering as a private person, not just part of the sacrificial system that the priests do. You feel like something is not okay with God and you, probably. And you need a peaceful coexistence. You want to hear from him, you feel there's something wrong, so then you can bring this Ola.
Maybe you want him to act on your behalf.
Right, that too, yes.
Like you can't, not necessarily that anything is specifically wrong.
Right.
Like it's not like you're thinking of, oh, I did this.
No, there's no specific.
Like, I can't think of anything I did wrong, but I really want you to work in this
right.
area.
Right.
And,
do we know, are all of these
Yeah, he probably talks about it. I just don't remember. I mean, he mentions that the purification offering happens in certain cultures, the Ola, but I don't know if there's a culture that has all five.
Or it would like distinctly describe in the same way.
Right.
You might have elements of all five, but a different.
Right.
Well, specifically with your last comment or suggestion, or now the interpretive lens that something's wrong or something's not right between us and God and we're attempting to make a pleasing odor, what I would want to know, because the specificity of Leviticus would probably be distinct from what other practices were. So why is there such specificity on, and again, when you bring this offering, it's not you, I am now commanding you to bring this offering, it's when you bring this offering, as noted before, this is probably something people back then did all the time, which we have plenty of records for, but it's the specificity of this is how you are to do it. I think I would be curious as to, do we have other records that suggest a different kind of recipe for the offering, compare that with Leviticus, and see what emerges. That's what I'd be curious if you have. because it doesn't say why. It doesn't say because there's something wrong between.
You know, there is, the only thing I can think of, I don't know if you have more, but after the flood story, the Babylonian flood story, the gods, because no one's been making sacrifices for a week, that first sacrifice, they just descend on and devour.
Like flies.
Count, the sacrifice is not actually eaten. It's a pleasing aroma. It's abstract. So it's moved from actual food for the gods to abstract pleasing.
So rather than satiating
a
deity's
God.
Appetite,
right.
It smells good to Yahweh.
Yeah, it's pleasing. It's somehow satisfying, but in a non-physical way. So you can compare. Where is that? The end of when Noah gets out and makes a sacrifice. I think that's where it first goes in the round. Wow.
Genesis 9,
something. Or the end of 8.
That makes sense to me because if the surrounding cultures, then or now, have a business of sacrificing to their god, to placate their gods, to feed their gods, to whatever. And God is saying, no, when you do it in this way, and it will be a pleasing aroma to me. So I love what you're saying, Sarah, because it's like it's moving from this which we would think of as a pagan idea of feeding your gods and putting out bowls. You know, there are a lot of cultures where you put out a bowl of rice or you put out a bowl of milk or whatever, and you apparently feed the gods. To simply making this sacrifice, I'm going to bring everything to you. I'm going to bring something very costly. If I can't afford to do this particular thing, then I'll bring a lesser one. I'll bring a dove instead of a cow or whatever. But it's now beginning to make sense to me.
So could a possible interpretation be when you're satiating the appetite of the God, that's much more about appeasement, whereas with the Genesis, the re'ach tov, the pleasing odor, is much more about this God delighting in his creation, or, I mean, I still see appeasement in Genesis 8:21, right?
Yeah,
I still see that appeasement. So that might be stretching the meaning.
Well, because his response in Genesis 8:21, you know, the Lord smelled the soothing aroma and said to himself, I will never again curse the ground because of humankind, even though the inclination of their minds is evil from childhood on. I will never again destroy everything that lives as I've just done.
Well,
so the idea is that it has, now he's seeing something, he's satisfied with it, I'm not going to punish them like I just did, I'm not going to be so harsh anymore. So there's some element.
It's connected with repentance, isn't it? Because the aroma, God just doesn't get a kick out of shedding of blood, like there's no remission for sin. That's why some of that sacrifice of animals is so important. Because without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. Seems like the whole world understands that to some degree in their purification with water and in their killing of an animal.
I have problems with it, Max.
We'll get to the purification offering. So it's interesting that here you don't have a grain offering. For the Ola, you only have animals. However, for the purification offering, you can have grain.
That's right.
Yeah.
But not the burnt. You said the burnt can't be anything but an animal.
Yeah, a burnt offering is only
no
an animal.
No grain in a burnt
yeah.
offering.
And it's because a purification offering is needed. It's required of you to purify. So if you really have no means, then you can still do it with grain. Right, so we talked about the Ola. Maybe we have a little bit of a better sense of what the Ola is for. We don't have time to read the Mincha because we have 5 more minutes.
We'll give you 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes? So maybe we'll read the Mincha and then also which is the grain offering. And then afterwards, maybe immediately also the next offering so that we've read the two parts. I don't know, maybe we shouldn't, because there's just not much time.
Yeah.
Are we going to read any Isaiah?
Well,
no time.
We haven't even read about the grain offering.
Off the top of your head connections?
Just about one. Maybe others too. Okay, let's quickly mention the grain offering. You can read the grain offering at home. That's chapter 2, it's all about the grain offering. It gets often attached to other sacrifices. And also here, the specific meaning of a grain offering is not clear out of the text. It is assumed knowledge. Then oil and frankincense are put in with the mixture.
I think it's put in all of it, because it says the remainder of the grain offering belongs to Aaron to his sons.
Uh-huh.
So you can't eat frankincense.
No.
And
so probably you take
it. Already deteriorate.
You probably take
just that
handful, put the frankincense on it, yes.
Because it kind of has to burn more than just
right.
flour, right?
Right.
Something to burn.
So how would you sum up the Mincha? From what?
Like what its purpose is?
Yeah, the purpose.
It doesn't say it.
The grain offering.
The exact purpose escapes. Well, some people, since you have in the purification offering, you also have a bull, a sheep, a goat, birds, and then you have grain offering. Some people say, well, maybe the grain offering is put here in the end as a connection with the Ola, that you can bring it as a grain offering.
Mm-hmm. Like if you're really poor, and
yeah.
you don't have any animals,
yes.
you can still bring some grain.
Yeah.
The question I have, because I missed why you had this category, did you leave off the fellowship offering?
Oh, peace or fellowship offering, yeah. Either one, yes.
And that's grain, right? That's
mm-hmm.
There's something of a dual purpose going on. As I read here from this week's parasha in the annual parasha, it says that if the people do a shkara, they don't do what the Lord has commanded, v'hayayim, and a shtaga is an inadvertent sin,
yes.
an error. They do something against the Lord, and it's not it's not like rebellion, but it isn't what the Lord commanded. And then they will offer a hatat.
Yes.
So hatat is, it's not just for uncleanliness, but it's also for sin.
Yes, but it is about what the function of a purification offering does, because then still the assumption, if it is a purifying, we're already jumping ahead, your sin does something to the tabernacle, and you bring your purification to wipe things clean within the tabernacle.
This is Bebi Ba.
Ah, okay.
So, in the Mincha is where we get the Kumin Chai is where we did the whole
Shabbat. Say, we missed it,
I mean, this is where we get the whole Shabbat practice of putting salt on the challah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right here in
verse
13, I think. Every sacrifice you bring.
So let me just read this one line, verse 15:27, Bagimba. The nefesh ahat tehta bishgaga. The Hebrew ba'ez bachnata le hatat. So there you get katat linked with sin, but it's the in-between kind of sin. It's not the,
mm-hmm.
it's a sin of a mistake rather than the sin of rebellion.
So we'll get there in Leviticus 4. Even in Leviticus 4 you have Bishkaga and we'll talk about that.
Good.
So if you're serious, we don't know what it means.
And also with the Ola, we guess, but we have maybe a better guess than with the Mincha,
yeah,
because
right.
It's a gift, and it doesn't say for what. But as I said, maybe it's attached to the Ola, and it has similar functions, namely, you give something that is precious to you, to God, for some
reason,
purpose.
And in my verse 7 it says, it may be made of coarse wheat flour, deep fried in olive oil.
Okay, the zevach.
It's matzah flour, so I don't want sort of donut.
I know, if it is deep fried, I don't make anything better.
So in the final offering that we have to actually discuss in this week's parasha, Leviticus 3, is the peace offering or fellowship offering, in which you eat, you get part of it. So there you have a real barbecue, in which you eat, but it seems like it is dining with God, because it mentions the word lechem, it is food also for God, which was purposefully left out in the Ola to go away from how offerings were understood in the ancient Near East. But here you do have, you eat from the sacrifice and you dine basically with God, apparently, a festive meal.
What verse is that?
Lechem 3, verse 11, I think.
And you had a lamb
yes.
in your hand.
But he doesn't have enough up here this time.
No. But before you slaughter it, you put your hand on it.
Yes, and there is no substitution or something.
Yeah.
Because you don't eat yourself.
Because smoke, no smoke.
And notice that for the peace offering you cannot offer birds, because if there's a feast you don't want two bites and your bird is gone, so you bring cattle, sheep or goats.
Do you have anything to say about the yeast and honey, why that is always forbidden? Or is that a bigger topic for later?
Well, we talked about it in another group, and honey seems to have the same
fermentation
as yeast, and maybe it's related somehow
to decay
exactly,
and that's separate from a
yeah.
holy God that's whole and complete,
right.
non-decaying.
Wow, is it yeast of all kinds? Well, Jesus is the word of yeast.
It can be. The yeast is also a symbol of the kingdom of God that spreads out, so it can't always be negative.
Oh, so here's that phrase that Jim brought up for in verse 16, which comes from Genesis 8, right? Noah sends up the offering as a smell, as a fragrant aroma to the Lord or whatever. But they have Nikoah. It's the same one there.
It's amazing, because I've got a new Bible and I'm starting to underline it. So it comes out three times in chapter 1, I don't know that it comes in chapter 2 at all, and then it comes at least twice in chapter 3, the soothing aroma, both in 16 and in 5.
Translate soothing?
I have soothing aroma to Adonai.
It does appear in chapter 2. Verse 12.
Got it.
Okay.
And you know it, 9. Verse 9 as well.
So we actually don't have time for the Haftarot. But has anyone read the Haftarot? Here? Okay, if no one read it, then there's nothing missed.
I think I did. I tried to make sense of.
But draw a connection if you saw one.
Yeah, you have that one connection.
Yes, just in Isaiah 43, where the three sacrifices are mentioned. Right, one after another, the three that we discuss right here. In 43 verse 22, Isaiah 43, 22, it says, "Yet you did not call upon me, O Jacob, but you have been wary of me, O Israel. You have not brought me your sheep for burnt offerings, or honored me with your sacrifices. I have not burdened you with offerings, or wearied you with frankincense." This is in exile probably. "You have not bought me sweet cane with money, or satisfied me with the fat of your sacrifices. But you've burdened me with your sins, you've wearied me with your iniquities." So here we have the three sacrifices mentioned, the Ola, the Mincha, and the Zevach.
But not the Shani.
And then it actually sets you up even for the Chatat, but then Chatat has the real meaning of sin in verse 24. So they're nicely mentioned together, but you know, if we want to discuss the whole passage, we would sit there for a lot longer and we miss something from down below.
Yeah.
So I hope that at least the Ola is a little bit clearer. Even if it's just a little bit.